we're so looking forward to having you down here a week before Christmas. Nice timing.
I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. And a Sunday afternoon, a Sunday evening, just before Christmas, no better way to get things rolling, right?
Well, it wouldn't be Christmas without TSO. It really wouldn't. You are such a strong part of Christmas down here in Tampa Bay. And with you celebrating, what, your 20th anniversary with TSO? That's amazing.
And it went by so quick. And thank you for saying that. I mean, one of the greatest gifts that I've ever received is when people turn around and say, hey, you know what, it's not the holidays without you guys or your music. And that's something we really never saw on the horizon when this thing started so many years ago.
Well, let's talk about the start so many years ago. How much of it do you remember? Is it all a blur?
No, I remember just about every minute of it. It's, you know, it's like having a child, you know, from infancy to adulthood.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many moments, there's so many things, there's so many little lightning strikes, no pun intended for Tampa, but so many things that occurred over the years that just kept guiding this to where it is today, you know, and at the front of this whole thing is my boss, Paul O'Neill.
Mm-hmm. Where was TSO given birth? Where did the concept come from? It's such an amazing thing.
Oh, that was Paul O'Neill. He was a producer in New York City that we became good friends back in the middle 80s. And he was, he was always talking about this fusion he wanted to create, you know, with classical music and rock music. And, you know, I never kind of, you know, knew exactly what he meant until we finally started recording together about 10 years after that. I think in 94 and 95, he had started recording a song with his partner, John Oliva, called Christmas Eve Sarajevo 1224.
Oh, yeah.
And the rest of the guys in the band, we all kind of got in the room and, you know, we just knew we were onto something very special. We just didn't know where it was going to go, you know. But I think in Paul's big brain, he saw it, you know, decades ahead. And here we are 20 years later. You know, it's just strange because it went by in 5 minutes, you know. I mean, 21 years since, you know, those records were first given birth. Sometimes I'll sit around my house and I'll think about it and go, how long have I been doing this?
I see the
God
same
willing,
thing.
God willing, let's get another 20 years out of it.
Well, we're kind of counting on that around here. You know, when I think of the concept of a rock opera, now I'll date myself on this one, I go back to Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes, ma'am, me too.
Strong influence there?
Oh, God, absolutely. Andrew Lloyd Webber. I mean, and talk about, you know, 1969 when that first came out, I mean, that was taboo. I mean, I grew up, you know, Italian Catholic, and me and my parents were like, this is blasphemy. I'm like, all right, relax. You know, but I remember watching that on TV with Ted Neely as Jesus, like singing and killing it, and the music was so aggressive for the time. And again, you know, the music and obviously the story is timeless, but the music is timeless as well. And I think that between Superstar and all of Andrew Lloyd Webber's works, bands like Pink Floyd and The Who and Alice Cooper and, you know, just people who were writing rock operas back then, you know, it was so much deeper than just your average song, you know. And Paul's always said that, you know, the songs have to work by themselves, but when they intertwine and they tell a bigger story, it becomes even more poignant. And I think Paul's story is, in a very Frank Capra-esque way, are timeless and are that important because everybody relates to them.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, I still have that original vinyl in my collection. Never given that one up.
Never get rid of it.
Oh, no. All right, you're taking it back on the road again for the 2016 tour, and the Ghosts of Christmas Eve is what we're going to be treated to. And this is an incredible piece of work. Tell us about the creation of that.
Well, thank you for saying so. We did a couple records, I guess, between 96 and 97. It was Christmas Eve and Other Stories and The Christmas Attic. And we had just touched upon Beethoven's Last Night. And somebody came up with the idea of filming an entire concert mixed with a, you know, again, another story that Paul had written. And it went to TV. And again, we didn't know what to expect, like everything else that we've done, that all of a sudden it became a perennial favorite within a matter of minutes. You know, people just loved the story. They loved the film. And it became, you know, our version of A Miracle on 34th Street or It's a Wonderful Life or whatever people would gravitate towards in the during the holidays. All these years later, Paul said, you know, what wouldn't be a bad idea is to do that as our opera, but also play the film along with it, so people in the audience not only get to, you know, hear the music and watch the band, the orchestra, the singers do their thing, but on these massive video screens behind us will be, you know, the entire film being played. So it's kind of taking you on the same journey we took almost 20 years ago.
Oh, and as you say, it's timeless, and it's very close to a best of. Everybody is going to know these songs, and I can imagine from you being on stage and looking into the audience and seeing their faces, you really have to get quite a bit of a rush seeing their reaction.
Yeah, I do, because I have the greatest seat in the arena, you know. I mean, I get to be part of a great rock band, part of a great production. But what will always, you know, make my heart skip a beat is looking out in the audience and seeing a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 95-year-old reacting to songs that I helped create all these years ago, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and the reaction from the audience has been so overwhelming to this particular piece that, you know, we actually pressed it onto CD this year. So anybody who goes online this weekend to buy tickets will get a download from the record, or of the record, excuse me.
Ooh.
These, like you had said, it's almost the greatest hits compilation. I mean, it's everybody's favorite songs from the first couple of records. So nobody walks out saying, oh, man, they didn't play this or they didn't play that. I mean, they get to hear their songs. But again, it's wrapped up in this beautiful story about a runaway girl who just wants to get home on the holidays, you know.
And as you say, it touches everybody. It's absolutely ageless when it comes to that. And you have a very nice philanthropic side to the tour as well, don't you?
Yes, we do. We Paul and I and a bunch of the other guys grew up in New York City, and you can't go 3 blocks, you know, without stumbling upon or running across somebody who just needs help for whatever the reason. You know, there's people who are down on their luck for an assortment of reasons, and Paul was always the guy to help these folks out. So when we started touring and we saw the reaction of the communities embrace us and adopt us and help us, help put us on the map, you know, all he ever wants to do is change the world. And Paul's not one to talk about doing things. He does it. He implements it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in order to show our appreciation, all we want to do is help the community give back to itself. So $1 from every ticket we've sold since 1999 has gone back into the communities that, again, you know, have just made us feel right at home year after year.
That is very nice. All the years that you've been doing this, all the years on the road, it's never gotten old, has it?
No, it won't get old. I mean, I remember in 1964 when I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and that grabbed me in the center of my soul, and it's never letting go. And I spent most of my childhood, you know, dreaming about it, most of my, you know, young adulthood planning and working towards it. And when it finally happened, I'm not going to let go of it ever. And every time I put a guitar around my neck and step on that stage, it's like being 16 all over again.
It's nice that you knew from such an early age what you wanted to do, because everybody doesn't reach that, do they?
No, they don't. And I think that if you said, you know, what's, you know, the greatest thing that's ever happened in your life besides, you know, my wife and the birth of my children and, you know, a wonderful family, I'd have to say, you know, just seeing exactly what I wanted to be. Whether or not I ever got there, you know, that was always a big question mark. But sometimes the journey to get to that place is just as much fun as the arrival. And I'm just really lucky that when I go to work, I love what I do. You know, I just love it more than anything else. Not that many people could say that, but the ones who can say that understand completely. And, you know, if I could do it, anybody could do it. All you have to do is just, you know, put your head down, pull your shoulders back, and don't let anything get in your way.
Boy, am I going to quote you to a lot of people.
Well, I have 5 children, and I've had this conversation with my oldest, who's 30, and my, you know, my brand new baby daughter, who's 4.5 months old. You know, it's just insert name here, but it's the same thing. I mean, my oldest son is in the Special Forces. My middle son is a touring musician who's doing incredible for himself. And my youngest son is in the Navy. And this is, they've all pursued, gone down the path that they wanted to. This is what they were born to do. This is what they want to do. My 5-year-old daughter, you know, she doesn't know what she wants to do yet, but she loves ballet. She loves the arts. She loves playing piano. She loves, you know, whatever she loves, she'll stumble upon that as well and hopefully pursue that.
Boy, you really have been blessed.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Time and time again. You know, time and time again. I must have done something right in my last life.
Oh, it's good to hear. And you've got a first Christmas coming up with a new baby, so that's also very cool.
Yes. Oh my God, it's so much fun. I mean, I knew that we had to get started with Presbyter early this morning, so she must have gotten that email as well, because at about, I don't know what time, 5:30, she was screaming for a bottle. My wife came down. We were all having coffee before the sun came up, so every day is fun around here. We could use some sleep, but it's a lot of fun.
Oh, who couldn't? But it sounds very idyllic.
Yes, ma'am. That it is.
All right, we're going to see you at Amalie Arena Sunday, December 18th. The tickets are on sale. And if anybody wants to find out more about you, TSO, all the good stuff, how about your websites and all your social media tabs?
Yeah, trans-siberian.com. Just go on there. That'll kind of like steer you towards everything about the band, what's going on, the new show, and also where to get tickets. And, you know, we just can't wait. Tampa is a first home for a lot of us and a second home for the rest of us. So it's going to be great to kind of, you know, spend a week before Christmas just blowing that building up and having a great time.
Well, take good care of Amalie Arena and take good care of yourself. We're so looking forward to welcoming you back.
Thanks so much. And will I see you at the show?
Oh, absolutely. Miss TSO? Heresy.
Not a chance.
No.
Good. I can't wait.
All right.
All my best to your family and everybody in your listening audience, and we'll talk real soon.